We welcome in our friend, author Colin Fleming. Hello there, Mr. Fleming.
Hey, what's up, Kimball?
Well, I appreciated your ode to a teacher who made a difference today, Mrs. Ferris.
Right, up in the blog, I saw that it was National Teachers Day. Day for everything. I think tomorrow's National AM Radio Host Day, so it's pretty exciting for you. Yeah, right?
Back-to-back great days.
I could write about you tomorrow. I could have written about you today if I ever had you in class. Big week. Yeah, I had a really cool third-grade teacher who was billed. So you get the news the summer before who your teacher's going to be. And I learned that mine was going to be this. It was almost as if she was this termagant, that she was incredibly strict. It's kind of the label of doom, right, for the school student. It means so much worse than just merely strict. And she was strict, and I loved it because I'm strict and very goal-oriented, very task-oriented, Kimball, very driven. It was great for me to have a teacher who encouraged me in my writing at a young age.
Nothing better than that. You know, it's like the Hippocratic Oath there, first do no harm. And I think it applies to teachers as well. You don't discourage people and step on and kill their dreams when they're young. And boy, if you can encourage them too, that's a wonderful thing. My son was the same way. I think 2 years in a row when he heard over the summer who was his teacher was going to be, he's like, oh, I heard she's strict. And he loves it. He thrives in that environment because he's pretty well organized, and he doesn't want to waste his time.
Yeah, I don't want to be with that teacher who is the coach, who's the player's coach. I like the hard ass. I like someone who brings the intensity, who's ready to go, who's prepared, who's competent. I've always been that way. I don't like people who describe themselves as chill. I don't want to know you. Let's stay on task. What are we doing? What's the purpose? What's the greater good? And I've changed a lot over the years. I'm always changing, but in some ways, I've always, even back then, I was this little form of what I am now. So I was ready to go. I was ready to write. And each time that I wrote a story in third grade, I was thinking, okay, you've done one. That's nice. How good are you, though? Have you lost it since you wrote that one? What do you have for me next? I was always that way. I'm that way now. It's just who I am.
We're talking with Colin Fleming on Downtown. The Boston Bruins, greatest regular season in NHL history. But I think you saw this coming. You certainly saw it early in the series, but you were putting warning signs out there throughout the last couple of months of the season that all was perhaps not as rosy as it appeared. What was it about this team?
I had my concern, really my only concern during the regular season as it wound down, was that they had created for themselves, and I don't think it was just the coach. I think it was upper management. I think there are a lot of cooks in that particular kitchen in terms of the decisions that they make with personnel. I didn't like that they didn't have a goalie. They had two goalies, and you didn't really know what would happen if one of them was going to be what a playoff goalie necessarily is, at least right now. They're going to play. And the reason you can't rotate goalies in the postseason is because even if you did it for each goalie played 41 games during the regular season, you can't do that in the postseason because it just sends a bad vibe to the team. If you win a game 3-1 and the goalie plays well, and to honor the rotation, you take him out, that creates just this bad juju for a team. And the people who don't understand that are typically people who've never played a team sport at any level, not even a high level. It doesn't work that way. It's not playing Dallas on a Tuesday in November and then St. Louis that Friday, and you're just switching in the middle of the season. You can't do that. So I didn't know what was going to happen with the goalies. And I knew that you couldn't flip-flop. And I wasn't sure about Ullmark being that guy because he could have been, and maybe he is, I think it's more likely, a classic case of someone having a career season. You see these guys who have this year in the sports, all the sports. Scott Erickson, remember him with the Minnesota Twins?
I do.
1991, 20-game winner. Then there's never a year like that or anywhere close to that. I think Omark was in an ideal situation for him in terms of workload management. The team he was on, he's a laid-back kind of guy. They had a laid-back kind of coach after the mean, big, bad wolf coach that was here previously. And I didn't like that uncertainty in a season where you had every opportunity to make certain of what was going to occur and why it should occur going into the playoffs.
Do you think there's anything to the notion that, as we sometimes see, this was a team that was built for the regular season but not for the deep playoff run?
I don't know that they were intentionally built that way. A lot of this team, in terms of their core, has been around for a long time. I think they are... I think that core isn't a winner-based core. I think Brad Marchand is a winner. I think he always rises to the occasion. He had, 10 points in this series? He had 11 in the seven-game loss last year. So 21 points in 14 games, pretty good. Pretty good playoff production. That's pretty good playoff production if it's 1984. You know what I mean? The year, not the book. And Patrice Bergeron, he comes back, and it falls apart. It's -6 in three games. He was out there for a lot of costly goals. Let me ask you, he's supposed to be this defensive center whiz. Do you think that happens if that's Bob Gainey? I mean, probably not, right?
Right.
And Bergeron, been around for a while, this two-way center, a lot of underachieving. Some of that has to go to him. I think they have players that are psychologically misaligned with what it takes to win in the postseason. I think they have a lot of guys like that, actually. I think Lindholm has proven now with the Bruins that he is a regular season player. He is an offensive no-show, and their problem wasn't scoring goals. But there are still plays that add up over the course of a game series that produce winning, even when they don't show up on the score sheet. He is so tentative in the postseason to assert himself at all offensively. And that colors the tone of a game. I thought that they had two guys, exactly two, who showed up every night and gave you what you needed. And one of them was the aforesaid Marchand, and the other one was Tyler Bertuzzi.
I agree.
You knew what you were going to get with them. They were going to bring it. They were not fazed by the occasion. But this team... I'm so, a lot of people talking lately about failure and choking. To me, choking is something it starts with the mental, and it manifests itself outwardly in the physical. But when you can't handle a situation mentally, and it's a big situation, you fail. You do what I call choking. I think that is choking, and it comes out in your physical performance. So many of these errors in this series that ultimately cost the Bruins the series, and there's plenty of blame to go around, were of their own making. And when people talk about it was a younger team and all of this stuff, Charlie McAvoy is not exactly long in the tooth, and he was a turnover machine. And he also gave you very little on offense. All of the postseason all-star stuff with McAvoy, I've been saying this for a while about him. He's average to a little bit above average. He's not what people want him to be. And I've cited his ice time to you in the past.
Right, right.
It's not, they don't think he is what other people want to believe that he is. He's oftentimes not even the guy out there the most on that team for their games. Can you imagine saying that about, I know he's one of the top 10 players of all time, but still, can you imagine saying that about Ray Bourque? That someone like Don Sweeney was netting more ice time than Ray Bourque? Can you even imagine that?
And, you know, when you talk about the mental aspect of it, too, I think that often manifests itself through a certain hesitancy, maybe not wanting to take a risk and be aggressive because you might make a mistake. And whether it's a golfer with the yips, whether it's that pitcher who all of a sudden can't find the strike zone, or whether it's guys who get the opportunity on a power play but decide to pass up the shot and make one too many passes because they don't want to be the guy that misses the big shot.
It can even be more subtle than that, because I'll tell you, if you hesitate for a second in hockey, with what you know that you should be doing, with what it's natural for you to do, you're screwed. It's over. You have no chance. If you're in a scoring slump, for instance, you get the puck in the high slot. If it enters your mind for that nanosecond that you're in a slump, that shows up in you getting that shot off not as quickly as you need to get it off. That's how subtle, that's how fine it is. Guys came out of their own zone with no pressure, and they're looking to make this pass that's perfect. I'm getting up and yelling at the TV, get it in deep. Their game is a simple game. This is not the 1987 Soviet national team with Makarov and Larionov and Batistov and Krutov weaving east to west through the neutral zone and just beguiling the defense. Get the puck deep, retrieve it, force the turnover, cycle in the corner. That's your game. That's a real lunch pail kind of game. That's a kind of late 1970s Bruins kind of game. That's what they do. They stopped doing that, and they tried to become the 1980s Oilers for some reason, with Paul Coffey doing these gorgeous stretch passes. They don't have that in them. The best stretch pass of the series was a three-zoner from their goalie,
right,
starting his first game in his best play of the game easily in that final contest. That's not who they are. When do you ever see McAvoy make some beautiful pass across multiple zones to hit a guy in stride? So why were they trying to do that? And then on the breakout, why is it still going around the boards? We can't get the center down low and execute the breakout that way? Like, why wasn't that adjustment happening? I understand that you have to play your game, and you have to believe in your game if it's a sound game. But they were getting so far off their game anyway. And then they overcommitted, I felt, to things that they had done before rather than making changes that would have allowed them to be successful in this series.
Now, I don't believe in curses in sports, but when you look at the President's Cup winners who have gone belly up in the postseason, you have to wonder, what is the correlation between regular season success and postseason failure? Because it seems to happen on a pretty regular basis in the NHL.
You know, I put no stock in that President's Trophy thing. I put stock in the Bruins being tight because they had the 65 wins. But normally, when a team wins the President's Trophy, I mean, first of all, like, who cares? It's not even an achievement, right?
Right.
No one even thinks about it. But they've won it by, like, a point. You know what I mean? Like, it's close. And it's not someone walking away with it. It's almost like a last weekend of the season. It's like, President's Trophy. So it's, how many times has the team that finished second, 2 points behind, won the Stanley Cup? Do you know what I'm saying? I don't really think that that means anything. There is, it's like I was writing on the blog, when you get into the playoffs, or when you're playing hockey, the thing that's a big difference about the playoffs and the regular season is there is now this, I used to have a coach, and before we went on the ice, he would make this profane speech about not just having balls, but balls as big as grapefruits. And he would, like, lower his hands. He's like, I can't even lift my giant balls. I'm like, yeah. It's a bit uncouth, but there's balls and passion required. And the Panthers, epitomized by their best player in Matt Tkachuk. And Matt Tkachuk is he's in the prime of his career. He is far and away the best player on these two teams. And I mentioned to you when we were texting during game four, when that crucial third period, before that, he's a dirty player. And I didn't mean to suggest to you that I was faulting him. I knew that they were going to take a number and get a shot in with him at the end. I knew that was coming, and that should have been coming. But he should have been dirty. You should get away with what you can get away with. If the ref isn't going to give you a penalty because you cross-check after the whistle, Garnet Hathaway in the ribs, cross-check the hell out of the guy. It's agitating. He was their physical leader. He was their spiritual leader, their emotional leader, and he had those balls as big as grapefruit. I was not confident at any point in that last game, even before the way I watched them defend the 6-on-5.
I wonder, too, you mentioned Tkachuk. I wonder if the series didn't turn on that late in the game cross-check that he nailed Allmark with, and he got sent to the penalty box for it. The Bruins won the game, but they were never the same after that.
He's a good player. I mean, he's a dynamic. He's a force. He's bigger than a guy like Marchand, and that helps. I mean, Marchand would really agitate in his sort of agitating prime. Kachuk, he reminds me a bit of Messier. Messier was just chippy, big, fast, and strong, and he could score goals, but he was even more effective as a playmaker. I knew that Kachuk was going to be in on tying that game and winning that game. I knew he was going to be a part of it. He wasn't going to be jumping over the board in celebration after his team won. He was going to be on the ice raising the stick. And when I watched that 6-on-5, it was a matter of time. Hockey is something that if you understand hockey, you can see what's likely to happen before it happens. And someone like Wayne Gretzky, that's why one of the reasons people sort of they underrate his physical skills. But that was this mental ability that he had that no one else had, to be the patch of ice before the puck got there. And, oh, boom, it's on my stick, and away I go. The Bruins, when you're – it's not the same as being in this 5-on-4 situation when you're in the box. 6-on-5 is more of a defensively attacking sort of outlook. You can't sag back and have each guy kind of get in the goalie position. It's just whether you're going to outlive the clock at that point. Because eventually you're going to get scored on unless you're just fortunate and the time runs out. And I thought also that I admired that Swayman went into that game, and I know he wanted to win, and I could see his battle level. There were three goals that shouldn't have happened. Now, the situation that created the opportunities for those shots, those really never should have happened. The turnover, and then you have the first goal of the game, which was a backhand from distance. By distance, I mean you have time to react, and it went through him. It went under his arm. You had two short side goals, and I don't think people understand how that works. That a short side goal, it doesn't matter. People are like, he was screened. He couldn't see it. You don't need to see it. It's a positional save. If you're in the right position, a lot of saves, frankly, are positional saves. That the goalie doesn't see. It's about your positioning. It's simple geometry. He's shooting from this angle. You're against your post. He can't score from there. The puck can't bang a Yui in midair and go around you and into the far side of the net. Now, of course, the Bruins, they had four opportunities on the game-winning goal where if they had done the right thing just once, the goal doesn't happen right there. But they're doing this Keystone Cops routine behind the net, and they're getting outworked by a fewer number of Panther players. And it was just kind of gross to me, to be honest.
So where do the Bruins go from here? They're likely to lose a bunch of these guys. Bergeron, I suspect Krejci, gone as well. Orlov, Tyler Bertuzzi may not be back. Nick Foligno, although I'm not sure that matters. But they're anywhere from probably 5 to 8 guys that'll be gone. They lose a bit of that core. Can they continue to compete for anything other than another first-round exit?
I don't think it's a bad thing. I know everyone does when you fail. I think that failure presents an opportunity. I think the Panthers exemplified that. They were the President's Trophy winner the year before, and they probably realized that this doesn't mean anything. Let's go kick the asses of these guys. Now, that was something with the Panthers. Sometimes in a series, you develop believability over the course of a series. It was very obvious to me that they came in with believability, that they thought that they could beat this team. And I'm sure that went up. They didn't panic when they were down 3-1. I think that they believed that they were going to beat the Bruins. I think they were a team that was in playoff mode for a number of months, and the Bruins were in don't get hurt and play the right way mode. And there's a difference. You'd like to think that the Bruins would learn from this, but they do this a lot. I don't think it's a bad thing that Krejci, I'm sure he's done. I'm almost certain he's done. Bergeron, I think it's time to move on. It just doesn't facilitate a winning culture. And I know that sounds strange. I'm sure he's a very nice guy and does the right thing and is a great teammate. but there's something off. It's time to move on from the court. And I think you've created a situation now. You do your little goalie hugs. I don't like that kind of stuff. Like, I would want it to be my net. I feel like Tim Thomas was a psycho, and that's why they won. A psycho in a good way, that he wasn't a technically sound goalie. They won that cup in terms of his portion of it because he competed his ass off and would have popped his mother in the throat to win that trophy. I like that. I don't see guys like that between those two. And I think that there's now something between them. Whose net is this? You cannot bring back both of those guys, platoon it up again, and do the goalie hug. You need to be a starter in the league, or you should need to want to be, and prove yourself. So that, to me, would be a huge thing. I'd look at Lindholm. I know it's not a huge contract, but I think he's shown you what he is. In the playoffs, you need to find a front line, first line center.
Yeah, I think they're stuck with Lindholm, though, for three more seasons.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was looking at his it's prior to his arrival with Boston, he wasn't a complete offensive no-show in the playoffs. And you know what? As good as Tkachuk was, how about Brandon Montour?
Yeah.
Defenseman. They got so much production out of him. I'm sure you noticed this. They just played so free. And you have to find a way in hockey or in life to play free, or you're going to get beat. You just, what's going to happen? Hockey, to me, it's not my favorite sport because there's just something of New England about baseball, and we've talked about that. But hockey is the life sport. If you play hockey and you pay attention, you will learn things about life. When you listen to people who know about hockey talk about hockey, they're always talking really about more than hockey. You can apply that to other aspects of your existence. And the Bruins, they didn't handle this well in a life sense. And that played out on the ice. Someone actually had phoned me right before you did, and they asked me, I'll ask you, where this rates in terms of Boston sports disappointments. Is it up there with like the 2007 Patriots, which I don't really think means anything at all? I don't think that team was that good. And did you really need another championship when the 2004, 2003 team would have beat the snot out of the 2007 Patriots, one-dimensional team? And really the only thing that I could think of in terms of where you were and what the expectations were would be the 86 Red Sox.
That's the place I go as well, is you were that close. You could taste it. I had the bottle of champagne out, ready to celebrate. And, you know, at that point, 86, I had been a fan for not quite 20 years. It was not like, you know, the long-suffering people who remembered Ted Williams playing on some fairly mediocre teams back in the day. But it was there for the taking. You thought it was finally going to happen. And then you had the rug pulled out from under you. I don't think it can be seen as a huge letdown when it happened so early in the playoffs.
One could also say that makes it worse, though, that you, I don't know. I mean, that, remember that series against Philadelphia? And that was failure. They were up 3-0 in the series. They were up 3-0 in Game 7. People don't really talk about that because they won the Cup the next year. They don't talk about it at all, save as a footnote. That, I mean, that's me, as someone who battles constantly. That's how I would look at the game. The moment that game was over, I'd be thinking about next year. Win it next year. It's just going to be even better and sweeter. And no one's even going to talk about this. They're just going to think about like what resilient badasses we are. The thing with the 86 Red Sox was it wasn't in a vacuum. You had all of the years of history before that. And the Bruins, every 25 to 50 years, they do win. Like, they choke a lot, but every now and again, they put it together and they win it all. They've underachieved for a long time. They were bad for a long time. They underachieved with Orr. They should have won in 79, I feel like. They should have won in 90. People think in 1990 that it was Wayne Gretzky and Paul Coffey, and it wasn't. It was a team in Edmonton that the Bruins were expected to beat that year. That was like a kind of last gasp post-Gretzky, Coffey was long gone, Edmonton Oilers team. The Bruins team was the team to beat, and they folded. So you have 2013. The 2016, losing that game with no compete on home ice, it's a bad one. the Red Sox, at least in 86, they were fortunate to be there after the ALCS, and it happened, this is something I'll always remember, it just happened really fast. They lost really fast. It wasn't like with the expectations that you had with this. The expectations with the Bruins have been in place since Christmas or before.
And, of course, as we know, if you want to get the real solid insight on sports after a defeat like that or at any time, turn to social media.
Yeah, there's great people out there. It's like, I feel like I'm insulting them when I say it's like a cesspool. Like, I'm insulting cesspools. Like, how bad is a cesspool, really? The anger that people harbor inside of themselves and the things that it's the typical, I don't mean the extreme, like what an exception this person is. I mean the typical person and just the stupidity. I see people, for instance, even some like bitter, nasty old fossil like Jerry Callahan showed up in my Twitter.
Oh God.
Guy was sports radio. I know like his the politics, whenever, but like when is he from? The 1950s? And so he was a young man like Bobby Orr, and he's saying, well, Swayman couldn't stop this. You couldn't see it. Like, how can you be that obtuse? How can you not know how goalie angles work when you've lived your whole life, or I'm assuming, in Boston, and you've watched hockey? How can you not know that? You were at a sports radio station. I said this to you before. I never see anything from anyone, rarely. I think the Bruins studio announced, analysts are pretty good, that I agree with. Like, it's quite seldom. I think Billy Jaffe knows what he's talking about. And you know who I think really knows what he's talking about, and this kind of makes it frustrating. When Jim Montgomery speaks after games, I almost always agree with everything that he says he saw. I think, yeah, I saw that too. I think he knows hockey. But you know what? I was probably, like you, incredulous when they let Bruce Cassidy go. Started talking about my teacher. I like a hard ass. Now, I feel like Cassidy was a hypocrite because he was only a hard ass to the younger players. I think he let Bergeron sort of co-coach that team and call shots. And the old boys network, so to speak, of the Bruins had a lot of say. For instance, when Tuukka Rask played over Swayman that time, and he shouldn't have in the playoffs. But they went in the opposite direction of a nice guy. It kind of tells me something about Cassidy and the Bruins locker room, that he thought those guys were soft. Those guys are soft. Some guys just aren't soft. I mean, he's a total dick, but Curt Schilling wasn't soft. David Ortiz, he's just, remember when he called David Price a little bitch when he was on the Rays? That's, it's just a mentality. It's, you have it or you don't. And I don't think you can necessarily learn it. It's the whole sort of 80s power ballad, Eye of the Tiger type of thing.
Well, that's a perfect summation right there. Colin Fleming talking Bruins with us here this afternoon. Colin, thank you so much. As always, we'll check in with you again next Tuesday afternoon.
All right, sounds good.